Hey, VBackLink family, it's Lily, and I was wondering if I could ask you a really quick favor. If the VBackLink has ever helped you, encouraged you, or taught you something along your birth after cesarean journey, I would be so grateful if you would vote for us for Best Podcast in NoCo Style's Best of NoCo Awards. As a Northern Colorado born and raised mama myself, this is especially meaningful for me. It takes less than a minute to vote, and we've linked it right in the show notes. Every vote helps more families discover the VBackLink, bringing more awareness to VBack education and support. Thank you so much for cheering on our little team. We appreciate you more than you know. So go to the show notes, click the link to vote, and then come back to this episode for another incredible episode. Hello, Women of Strength. Welcome back to the VBackLink podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Lily. I will be joined later today by my co-host, Paige, and our amazing guest, Liz. Full disclosure, we had some fun technical issues on today's episode. And so that's why you're getting just me in the intro. And then you'll see Paige later. And then she will pop out at some point because she had to go get her kids from school. And it is just a lovely world that we live in as moms, as doulas, and doing this podcast internationally has these types of hiccups. We had tech issues, so we're recording actually really late at night. It's currently 10:15 p.m. my time, but Paige lives in Korea, so it's tomorrow for her and during the day, so she had to go pick her kids up from school. So you're getting a little bit of me, and I'm just honestly so excited for you all to hear today's story. I've been just in love with it for 4 months since Liz had her baby. Liz is not local to me. She lives in Wyoming, but she had her baby at the same hospital that I had my own VBAC at with the same midwife, and I'm just absolutely obsessed. My friend Danielle was her doula and her birth photographer, and she came to a birth class that our doula agency offers, and I'm just like ecstatic for her. So much fun to listen to her story on the podcast today. I know you're going to love it. I don't know. I feel like Paige and I do some like little chit-chat life update moments. I don't have a lot for you. I'm back on call. I've been off call for a little while, so that's really fun. I'm waiting for a client to call. She'll be 40 weeks in a couple days, so we're just hanging out and waiting for a baby, and it's a sweet season to get to do this and to hold space for not just stories, but to really get to be in the room and to do all the things. This client that I'm on call for is a first-time mom, and just knowing that having a doula just changes the trajectory of where your birth goes, you know, like we can make a difference in the primary birth of people. It doesn't have to be like what so many of us have experienced with a traumatic experience and then a redemptive one. Like we can just have great birth out of the gate. And that's something I feel really passionate about as a doula is supporting that for moms. So, okay. Well, I am going to give you a little bit about Liz that she wrote up for us, and then we'll read a review of the week and get into Liz's story. So I cannot wait for you to hear it. All right. So Liz writes about herself. She says, I am a mama of three beautiful children. I love reading, exercising, and a cozy night watching the Great British Bake Off with my husband. I recently had a VBA2C, the birth of my dreams, and I have been a fan of the VBackLink for years, which is just so special to get to have her on. All right, my friends. So review of the week, and then we'll get over to Liz. This review comes from Laura on Apple Podcasts, and it's titled HBA2C Done. First, it says, been listening to you ladies for months and getting ready for my VBA2C. Had our baby yesterday with an unmedicated hospital birth, still amazed and ecstatic. But then she came back and updated and said, here again, and I had an HBA2C this time. The best way to learn about birth is hearing as many stories as possible. Thank you for such an encouraging podcast. And Laura, thank you for listening. If you are listening to this episode, we are so ecstatic that you had your HBA2C. Congratulations on both of your beautiful births. And it is our great joy and great honor to get to hold space for all of the women of strength in our community and to hear your stories, your VBAC stories, your CBAC stories, and to get to do this work is just a high honor. So Paige and I are just stoked to be here, and we will get to Liz's story. So here we go. Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBackLink podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same, to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider.
All right, Women of Spring, welcome back. We are so excited to hear Liz's story. I've been fangirling over this for literal months. Her daughter is, what, 4 months old now, I think?
Yeah.
I cannot wait to hear it. So Liz, the floor is yours. Share away, my friend.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. It's such an honor to share my story with you guys. I'll get into how I stumbled upon the VBAC link a little bit in my stories, but it is such an honor. It's been years in the making, honestly. My oldest is turning 6, so it's literally been 6 years of my heart and soul preparing and researching for a VBAC. So it's been a big journey. Yeah, so like I said, when we found out we were pregnant with our first, I was 24, and we were super excited. My husband and I were both in school, and we were really blessed to get pregnant really, really quickly. And we found out we were having a boy, and I was just overjoyed. And the pregnancy was really standard. I didn't have any problems, really. I also didn't do much research. You know, your first pregnancy, you don't know what you don't know. Pretty much my only research was the baby center app, where it was telling me, okay, this month he's the size of a butternut squash. That was pretty much all that I did. I feel like that, you know, I was still in school, and so my time was focused on my studies and graduating. So yeah, I just didn't do much research. And I do remember having a little bit of bleeding during my second trimester, which kind of made me a little bit nervous. And being in this small town in Laramie, Wyoming, our availability of providers is really small. There's actually only one hospital here, and to get to any other hospital, it's 45 minutes anyway, north, south, east, west. It's 45-minute drive. And so having a low availability of providers, it was kind of hard for me to find one that I felt like I really clicked with. And my father-in-law is actually one of the providers, so I knew that that wasn't going to be an option for this birth. So that narrowed my pool even lower of who I wanted to see. But yeah, so I did have some bleeding early on, and luckily the providers told me it was a subchorionic hematoma and it was able to resolve itself. But kind of after that moment, it kind of was just a cascade of my anxiety was really high. Once you start getting to the point with your pregnancies of like kick counts, as a first-time mom, I had a lot of anxiety of that. And I didn't know that my placenta was anterior, and my provider didn't tell me that. And so I was like, is this normal? Is this not normal of how much I'm feeling him? So I actually did do a few NSTs just to make sure everything was okay. And luckily everything was. But with him, everything changed at about 36 weeks. I gone in for a normal checkup. And I feel like because I had called in for NSTs previously, like the nurses were more on high alert of like, oh, maybe there's, I don't know, not an issue, but I don't, just more high alert of what was happening type thing. And so I went in and had another NST, and it wasn't very reassuring. And so the nurse was like, well, let's get the OB in here and we'll do a biophysical profile. And that wasn't very reassuring for her. And again, with this provider, it was in and out in 5 minutes. There wasn't like a good, strong rapport with her. Like I felt comfortable, but I wasn't like, you're my best friend, let's go get a drink together, you know, like it wasn't like we clicked. And so she came in and she did a biophysical profile. And again, he didn't pass. I think it was like 4 out of the 6. I don't know if you guys could correct me on how many points they have to pass for the biophysical profile, but they wanted to admit me overnight. And thankfully everything was completely fine with him. And then I had a checkup a few a few days later, and the first thing that she says to me is, well, because of all of this stuff that's been happening, I really just got off the phone with a high-risk doctor in Fort Collins, and we think you should be induced tonight. And I was like, oh my gosh, like something's not okay with my baby. Like, I view this doctor as a person that I trust. And if she got off the phone with a high-risk doctor, of course, this is what needs to be happening. And of course, that was the first appointment Brendan, my husband, wasn't able to attend. And so I was just by myself. Again, not much research of what was happening, essentially. And so, of course, I wanted a healthy baby. So we said, okay, let's go for the induction. And I was only 37 weeks. So my body was not ready at all. After this whole experience, I asked my mom, and I was like, Mom, when did you have your babies? Because again, I didn't even ask my own mother of her own experiences. And she said, oh yeah, I always went past my due date. Your grandma went past your due date. All my sisters went past her due date. And I was like, wow, that would have been really nice to know going into this. Yeah. But
wise of you to ask, like, even after that, to think, to have the wherewithal to be like, wait.
Yes. Yeah. So I was not ready at all. I was closed, not even dilated at all. And she was like, well, let's just give you the steroid shot to help the baby's lungs, make sure that the baby's lungs are ready. So we went in that night, and I'm pretty positive they did Cervidil to get things going, and then started a low dose of Pitocin. But essentially, I did not get any help from the nurses at all of different positioning, peanut ball, walking in labor. It was literally just my husband and I in the birthing room, just expecting to have my body do what it was supposed to be doing. Little did we know that inductions and having that cascade of interventions was really hindering the birthing process. Yeah, so we did low dose of Pitocin, and the midwife that was on call would sometimes come in and check on me, and she was like, well, this is not going very fast, so we're just going to break your waters. I think I was probably about 4 or 5 centimeters, so really not much progress in that regard. And so she laid me all the way back, and I almost passed out when she was attempting to break my waters. And it was the most painful experience ever, because I was just not ready. My body was just resisting what was happening. So she broke my waters and just left. And my husband and I were alone again. Again, I was not moving. I was in the bed after my waters had broken. And then the OB on call, the doctor that I had been seeing throughout this whole pregnancy, comes in, and she's like, well, let's just see where your baby is at. And so she checked, and he had turned OP. And the only thing she said to me, I can remember it clear as day, she said, I will either have to manually turn him, or we will go in for a C-section. Those were my two options. And it was, I had never even thought of a C-section. It was not on my radar. The very minimal things I remember is the brief slide of a C-section during the birthing classes that the hospital offered. So yeah, it was just not on my husband and I's radar at all. And so to have her presented as, I will physically turn him, which was excruciatingly painful just to have my waters broken, I wasn't about to have her go in there and manually turn him. And she said, she's, I know that you and your husband want to have a lot of kids, so that having a C-section would affect that. And so she's like, I'm just going to leave you to decide. And that was pretty much it. No risk and benefits. Just, we know you want to have a lot of kids. This affects it. So it was just very, very minimal information. Yeah. And we were just left on our own, essentially the entire labor. So we prayed about it, and ultimately we just decided to have a C-section. And so they wheeled me back there, and I just remember the blaring lights over me. And it was scary. We didn't know what was happening. And my husband got into the scrubs and she started performing the C-section. And I told her, I was like, I can feel this. She didn't really explain like, okay, you're going to feel some tugging and pulling and that's totally fine. Like it's normal to feel a little bit of tugging and pulling during the C-section. So when I told her that I could feel it, she immediately thought that it was like painful. It was like an excruciating pain. I feel like that's what was in her mind. I don't actually know what she thought, but I was just, yeah, I told her I can feel this. And so she's like, okay, we're going to have to put you out. And immediately I was out. Yeah. And so what happened next, I was told after I got out of general anesthesia, they wheeled my husband out. He had to get out of the operating room because I was put under general anesthesia. So he actually did not witness the birth of our first son either. So he was just standing at the door looking through the small window, not knowing if I was okay, if our baby was okay. And the next thing that I remember is, I was doing fine, is he was holding Benjamin, our son. And I was so out of it. And he was holding him and he was like, this is your son. This is your baby. And I was like, it's not my baby. I don't know who that baby is. And it was just, gosh, it happened so fast. Like it was just not what we were expecting at all for our first birthing experience. And everybody talks about, you know, you see your baby for the first time and you instantly have that connection. And just being under general anesthesia, it took me a long time to come to and to realize like, oh, this is my baby. Like he is my son that was inside of me. And I felt lost and I did not understand how this all could have happened. And it was prior to COVID. So he was born in November and then everything shut down after that. So I feel like that postpartum experience was really lonely in the fact of, you know, I didn't know, is this experience normal? Are there other moms that had this experience? And that is when I started researching. And that's how I found the VBAC link, is through that research during COVID. And so during that postpartum time, I feel like the VBAC link really helped me heal parts of our story of what happened. But there was also a point of in my brain, it was like that OB that performed the C-section was like my savior in the way of like, oh, my son was, you know, in distress and she like helped him have a healthy delivery. So I remember emailing her and saying like, this is my son, and sent her a cute picture because it was COVID. So she, you know, there was no checkups really. And I was like, this is how he is doing. And just like thanked her for the experience. And so that was just like, I don't know. It was just this way of seeing, trying to find healing and understanding through it. But again, through that process, going through my research through the VBAC link and other things, I realized like, oh, there was a lot of things that happened that did not need to happen. There was a lot of the cascade of interventions that happened of breaking my waters, the induction, really just my body was not ready at all to have this baby. And so it was a good learning point for me. And we knew, like we said, we wanted to have a lot of kids. So again, I don't know if I fully was prepared to go through the birthing experience again, but I knew I wanted a little boy and another little boy, which is what we had. So the brothers could be close in age. So we were able to get pregnant again really quickly. We are very blessed to not struggle with fertility. And I recognize that as a huge blessing. I was really excited, but also terrified of the experience happening again. And I also was like, well, let's just try with the same provider to see, you know, if it would still work. again, because of where we live, there's really not that many options. But within the first appointment, I was like, okay, I cannot see this same provider. It was no discussion of my past, like no talking about how Benjamin's C-section went. It was just in and out, 5 minutes of, oh, you're expecting again. Great. Like, you know, just a new routine appointment. And thankfully, at that point, my father-in-law's clinic had hired on a midwife. So I decided to go see her at that clinic. And at first, I felt like she was very VBAC supportive. But in hindsight, looking back at the experience with Peter, my second son, I would definitely say she was more VBAC tolerant. The quality of care was different with her appointments that I had received previously, which was a breath of fresh air. Again, my pregnancy was great. I didn't have any issues or complaints. And we were super excited to find out that we're having a boy. So these brothers would be really close in age. They're about 22 months apart. I definitely did do more research and read books, and I was listening to the VBAC link really consistently. And so that was super helpful. But again, in hindsight, I feel like it was just skimming the surface of research. I read birthing books, but not so much VBAC-specific books and had VBAC-specific stories. Another tricky thing that kind of added to the situation is if I did end up having a C-section again with this second pregnancy, my father-in-law would be the one to perform the C-section. And so that was kind of a tricky thing in my mind of having that crossover of family coming into this very tender and sacred space. And coming into that space that carried a lot of baggage and memories from my first birth. But again, up until this point in pregnancy, it had gone really well and I felt really confident. And at 39 weeks and 5 days, I was offered a later term ultrasound. And of course, I wanted to see our cute boy. And my husband was joking around that it'd be really convenient if we had that baby that night because he had a class from 7 to 9 p.m. and he did not want to go to class. So she performed the ultrasound and she said, well, your fluids are a little low, so we should get this baby out. And I was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Here we go again of another induction. Luckily, I did know that I was about 1.5 centimeters. And I was super excited too, because I was like, great, my body is actually doing what it's supposed to. And I actually hadn't ever experienced that before. I didn't experience that with Benjamin. So when she told me I was 1.5 centimeters, I was like, this is fantastic. Like, my body is doing it. And I was super pumped. But again, at this point, with the minimal research that I did, more research than I did with my first birth, but again, just kind of scraping the top of the research, I didn't know that lower levels of fluid, you can help that with staying hydrated or resting and you like rechecking. I didn't really, you know, think that anything could be done about that, if that makes sense. I don't know if you guys wanted to correct me on that with low amniotic fluid. So I was like, okay, well, if totally. I did not know that. So
yeah, the hydration is such a big thing, right? Because mm-hmm. it matters, and it's always okay to ask for that second opinion or like a recheck. And so I love that you brought that up, because I think that that's important to know, especially like in anything. If it's not super emergent, you're absolutely allowed to say, can we recheck? Can we try again? Can I get a second opinion? Like, that is right. All within the realm of your right as a patient, you know?
Right.
So I love that. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. And I feel like that point, inductions were just so common that I was like, okay, well, if I'm already 1.5 centimeters and she offered the Foley balloon, that's different than the Cervidil because my body's already doing it. So like, therefore the induction should go easier is what I had in my thought process. So yeah, so she suggested the Foley balloon, and that did work. I remember I think I got to about 4 to 5 centimeters with the Foley balloon. And I had an awesome nurse finally to help me with different positioning and walking. It was is very different than how it was with Benjamin. She suggested getting into the tub, which was super helpful. Unfortunately, at this hospital, there's not birthing pools. So being 6 foot, it was a really small tub for me to labor in, but it did help a little bit. And I actually...
I did not know you were that tall.
Yes. Yeah, I am a very tall mom. Yes. So I was able to get to about 8 centimeters. Wow. 8 centimeters by myself without, you know, just walking, just the controlling of the labor pains that way. But I was like, man, this is really, really intense. And so I was like, oh, what about the epidural? And the nurse who I had was like, no, you're so close. Like, you don't need the epidural. And I was like, okay, I can do it a little bit longer. And it was just so intense. And I don't feel like, because I never reached transition or even that stage with my first birth, I was not mentally prepared to get to that transition point in this pregnancy. So I did ask for an epidural, and that is kind of when everything went downhill. It only worked on one side, which I did not know could happen. And I started having a lot of pressure on my left side. And I knew that uterine rupture could be a thing, but I didn't know exactly what that meant. And so with that pressure on the left side, I was really worried about that. And so the midwife checked me and she was like, well, he's OP. And I was like, how is my baby OP again? 2 for 2. I had OP babies. And she was like, well, do you want me to break your waters while she was checking me? And I was like, no, I do not want my waters broken at all with the experience I had with Ben. And she's like, well, I just did it anyway. And I was like, are you kidding me? I just told you no. And the only thing you said is, well, I just did it. After you told me my son was OP, like, I couldn't believe it. And I feel like all of my trust with her flew out the window. I just get like this visceral feeling of I just want to soccer punch her.
Like, well, that's obstetric violence.
Yeah.
That's something done without your consent. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I just lost it after that point because I just knew that I couldn't trust her after that. And so my husband and I were together for a little bit and she came back in and checked me again after she broke in the waters. And she was like, okay, you're at a 9, but there's a cervical lip. And again, the epidural wasn't working. So I just remember she told me to face the back of the hospital bed, and herself and a nurse were trying to physically maneuver the cervical lip up. And it was horrible. I literally felt like I was being assaulted. And I just the memories of it. And this comes into play with the quality of care I wanted with this birth. Yeah, but so many people's hands were on me and it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. And it wouldn't move. The cervical lip didn't budge at all. And I was so defeated. I was so sick of people touching me, of just being in that space, in that pain. Like, I was in pain and everybody was touching my body. And so we kind of took a break and just kind of decompressed. And the midwife was like, well, what about a C-section? And of course, after everything that I had just gone through, I was like, what other option is there? There's the only answer is a C-section. And I remember flipping on my left side and I looked up at the board of the progress board where they have like the images of dilation. That's in our hospital. They have like 0 to 10 centimeters. And they wrote 9.5 centimeters on the board. And I just sobbed because I was 0.5 centimeters away from being essentially ready to push. And so my father-in-law walked in after they had called him because he would be the one to perform the C-section. And he saw me sobbing and he was like, is this just bringing up a lot of memories from your first birth? And I couldn't even respond. I just nodded my head. And they wheeled me back again. And all I remember is them putting the mask up to me. And I said, how am I supposed to breathe with this thing? And I was out once again. There was no offering of spinal. There was no retrying of the epidural because, again, there was no emergency. My son was doing completely fine of fetal tones. His heart rate was completely fine. Yeah. And so, again, I was robbed of my son's birth. Thankfully, this time, because it was my father-in-law, my husband was able to stay in the operating room. They let him stay. And my husband was able to get some pictures and a video. But I, to this day, I haven't looked at them. I think I maybe looked at one picture once. But my son, my middle son, just turned 4. So it's been 4 years and I haven't looked at those pictures or the video because I just can't. Yeah. And I honestly don't know how long I was out. I don't know how many hours it was before they wheeled me in to see my son because he stayed in the nursery. He had a collapsed lung. His left lung was collapsed. So I have no clue how many hours it was before I got to hold him. And I was in a really dark spot automatically. I remember texting my mom. I think I was still in the hospital and I texted her. I was like, you have to tell the family. They cannot ask me about this birth. I will not discuss this birth. And my sister-in-law had a baby 3 months prior to this one. So I was, the postpartum depression hit me really fast with this middle birth. And it took me these 3 years to work through everything that happened. Yeah, I cried all the time and it really affected my breastfeeding journey with him as well. I only breastfed for about 2 weeks and I was in pure emotional survival mode. I had this baby to take care of and this toddler. And at my 6 week follow-up appointment, I asked the midwife that was at this clinic if I could do a VBA2C, and she said no. She said they are not supportive of that. And so I thought that was it for me, that once a C-section, always a C-section. And I completely thought it was all on me. My body had failed and my body was broken and that it was incapable of birthing my babies.
Taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula. All right, let's get back to the episode.
So I carried this pain for a really long time. And at this point, my husband got a job in Central Texas and my youngest was about 1.5 years. By the time that I started to heal these deep wounds, I searched for a midwife group in the Central Texas area that was VBAC supportive. And I found one called Dulce Birth Services. And I met with a midwife and told her my experiences. And for the very first time, I heard from a trusted provider that what had happened to me was not okay. So that was, yeah, 3 years from my first birth and a year and a half from my second birth that I heard for the first time that it was not okay what had happened to me. It was the first time that I heard was not normal, their treatment of me, and it was not typical of how birth could happen, and that my body wasn't broken, and I was very much capable of birthing these babies naturally, like millions of women do all the time. And she told me that a VBA2C was absolutely an option for me, especially that with my second birth, I had progressed to 9.5, and my body did do what it was supposed to, granted, even with Pitocin. And I remember crying a lot and telling my husband that I finally heard what I needed to hear, that I wasn't broken. But there was also a lot of tears of bitterness for what was taken from me from these births. And after many discussions with Brendan, we decided that it would be best to move back to Wyoming, to Laramie, so he could further his education. But I had a lot of anxiety, and I was really scared for moving back here, knowing that we wanted to have more kids. I knew that I could not even step foot into the hospital of where these births happened. So it took me a lot to find the people and the clinics that I needed. But I 100% know it was God directing me to find the doula and the clinic I ended up with. So I started researching doulas in the area and connected with Danielle Kent. Bravo.
She's the best.
Yes, she's the absolute best. I connected with her actually a year before we even wanted to start having babies, having our third baby. And I told her my story, and it was the same thing of, I cannot believe this happened to you. And we just kind of started processing together. And I really had to turn inward. It was those probably the moments of growth I have witnessed in myself that I have never witnessed before. And I knew that things had to be different inside of myself this time. And so connecting with Danielle early on was really, really helpful in that process. And I knew that I could not birth at the hospital that I had these, my boys at. Mm-hmm. I knew the quality of care was not what I was looking for. So I started again doing research, and I found the women's clinic, or the women's place in Fort Collins, which is actually where Lily had her birth. Yeah. I actually don't know if Paige remembers this, but again, a year prior to when we were actually ready to start trying to have a baby, I did a welcome interview with Paige. And I told her, again, my experiences. And for the second time, from a provider, I heard from a validating person about validating my experience, that it was absolutely horrific what I experienced. And one thing that I remember clear as day, what Paige told me, is she said that we are just the shepherds, but you are absolutely in charge of your birth. And from that point on, I knew I had to go to that clinic. Meeting with Paige, it just clicked. Everything fell into place. And again, I'm a person of faith, and I 100% believe that everything leading up to the birth of my daughter was led by God. And I literally became obsessed with all things VBAC. And preparing for this, I was going back through the notes on my phone, because I knew I had copied and pasted the text from some prior VBAC Link podcasts. And I had a note in there from 2023 about how you literally have to be all in and obsessed about your VBAC preparation, because you are the only person that can advocate for yourself. So just having that from 2023 showed how much I was all in for this. I bought books. My husband was like, why are you getting all these Amazon packages? But I had stacks of books. I read Ina Mae Gaskin's book and the pictures of what a physiological birth could look like. The stories of these women of having calm births, having these primal births where they roared their babies out. I watched videos of birth. I also read, highly recommend the Fearless Birth book by Emma Armstrong. She goes by the Naked Doula on on Facebook and Instagram, and phenomenal. And also what was really key for healing was I got the book called How to Heal a Bad Birth. And I remember this little passage that I highlighted that said, you know, you're ready to have another baby when you are wanting to have the baby to have the baby versus wanting to have a birthing experience again.
Wow.
And that was so profound for myself and for my husband, especially because I didn't want to not like put the blame on the baby if I had another bad experience. And we wanted to make sure that our emotions were in check of, am I actually wanting to get pregnant and have this human come into our lives just to redeem myself from those bad births? Or am I doing it to have another soul come into our family? And we want this baby. And so that really helped.
That's sick.
Yeah, it really helped ground myself to making sure I was ready and doing the necessary steps to have another human in our family, join our family. So that was a lot of my mental preparation. And as part of healing myself was, or healing during this process was the physical recovery. I started seeing a pelvic floor therapist. Her name is Gretchen Claude, and she quite literally changed my life. She is a champion of women. She has helped me love my body and see it as a creation of God. She gave me tips of strength training and lifting heavy weights. And that gave me power back of seeing myself and my body as good and not broken and capable of doing hard things because of with my births with my sons, that was the hardest thing, is seeing my body as a complete failure. And then, again, being a 6 foot tall woman, I was always afraid of taking up space. I'm not a petite girl. And so I kind of always would like slouch and just be worried about having a presence. And I remember doing a session with her and she was like, be tall, woman. And I'm like, I am tall. I've been tall my entire life. And she was like, no, be tall. And so that just, it was her telling me of, it's okay. It's okay to take up space and it's okay to be in the body that you have. She also helped me with scar tissue massages and just breaking up the scar tissue. And really every appointment with her was a therapy session. We talked a lot about my experiences and processing that. It was so quite literally, it was life-changing to work with her. I mean, it was also really important for me to go to therapy and process all that happened. The therapist that I met with suggested printing off my birth records and the hospital records of what had happened, and writing out what I could have controlled and what I couldn't control. And that was really, really helpful of knowing that there is a broken system that I was working with. And it really wasn't me. And after therapy and all this literally intense research and just putting my all into this, my husband and I felt like we were ready to have this baby, to bring this soul in. I felt like I was at such a good place mentally of knowing I wanted another baby versus having a redeeming birth experience. I did want that too, but it was more important to have this baby. And actually, the night before I took the pregnancy test, I had a dream that I gave birth to a girl with a full head of dark hair. Sorry. Again, like I said, I just have felt God's hand in all of this. And that was definitely a sign from God. I remember holding her in the dream and she just had this beautiful dark head of hair, which is really crazy to me because both of my sons are blonde. And I was really excited to have a girl. And when we found out the baby was indeed a girl at the anatomy exam, I was overjoyed and felt like this dream was coming to pass. And this entire pregnancy felt so different. It felt so hopeful. my appointments with Paige at the women's clinic or the women's place were absolutely incredible. I was not just a number to them. The appointments, they block out, I think, an hour for each appointment, which is unheard of, quite frankly. And it's an hour and 15-minute drive from where we're at. So it was quite a commitment. I'd take my babies with me and we'd go, and just the standard of quality care was night and day difference of what I received. I remember texting my sister after an appointment, and I was just in tears. There was a lot of crying through all of this, but I was in tears because Paige actually talked to my baby when she was checking my tummy to see her positioning. And I had never, ever experienced that. She felt her and said, hi, baby girl, and just was talking to her and making her an active participant in this. And I felt so unbelievably cared for. And working with Danielle again was so helpful. One of the biggest turning points, I think, in all of this is we met up at Chick-fil-A in Cheyenne. So it was like a halfway point for all of us. And with my husband, so my sons were able to go play and we were able to chat with my husband. And it was so helpful for him to have another voice of the risk and benefits of a VBA2C. I feel like because his dad is an OB, he very much knew the medicalized side of it. And he didn't know essentially what birth could look like in a physiological sense. So having Danielle there to help him and I work together and to really meld what we wanted for this birth was super helpful. And it really helped us come together as a team of myself, Danielle, and my husband. We also took an incredible 2-day birthing class called Birthdays. Lily is an advocate for that.
Yes!
And Laura and Kylie are incredible instructors. They
really are.
A class of low intervention hospital births, which is exactly what we wanted. And again, I feel like that really helped my husband seeing like, okay, this is possible in a hospital setting. We can have a physiological birth in a setting where if something catastrophic happened, we're at a hospital that I could be taken care of. And I was actually,
and I'll shout them out too, that they are going to offer that class virtually. So they're doing one. I think they're going to do it every quarter. I can't speak to that. So Women of Strength, if you are listening and you need a fantastic birth class taught by an amazing doula and a labor delivery nurse of 13 years turned doula, Birthdays boot camp is your thing. It's your thing. Yeah. Liz, actually, you zoomed in, right? Because you were sick or something on the first day.
Yes, I was so bummed because it was going to be like our mini like baby moon. Like my mother-in-law was going to take her boys and I woke up with the worst stomach bug. And I was like, no, I was looking forward to this so bad. But I really think it was beneficial because Laura, she's so amazing. We did a Skype session to make up for that one day. And I felt like it was better that way because we were able to tailor it more for VBA2C versus a first-time mom preparing for their birth. So she was fantastic and took even more time out of her schedule to do this one-on-one session with us. And again, from that portion with her, one of the things I remember is the mantra of, this is hard and I'm doing this, to take it with you in the birthing room. So that stuck with me really, really well. Another piece that I wanted to add to is surrounding yourself with supportive women and friends. That was my lifeline during this third pregnancy. I leaned on them to discuss my fears, my excitements, my stresses. They were absolutely phenomenal. They gave me a mother's blessing before my due date. And one of the activities that I loved so much is they had this red piece of yarn. And we would say, my name is Liz. I come from Kathy, who comes from my grandma Zola. So it was just this chain reaction of all these women that we've come from and they wrapped it around a candle that I could take with me into my birthing room. So it was
that just, is so special.
It was absolutely beautiful of just knowing that we have these women, this force of women behind us in the birthing room was really, really special. And as I was getting closer to my due date, I was having serious prodromal labor. One evening, I was sure that it was time to go in, and I called Paige and we talked it through, and we decided it would be best just to wait it out. And sure enough, around 7 a.m., they all completely stopped. So every night for about a week at 10 p.m. on the dot, prodromal labor contractions would start. I almost didn't even want to go to bed because I knew that they would happen. So it was just this cycle of being exhausted. But at this point, I felt like I really had to protect my space. Quite frankly, I stopped going to church for a week or two because so many people were asking me, like, oh, are you having this baby? And I'm like, just stop asking me. So I got off social media and just went into my zone. I had to just protect my space during that time. And I remember I was about 40 weeks and a few days, and I had an appointment and I felt okay getting checked. I talked with Danielle and we discussed, like, okay, what are the benefits of getting checked? What would happen if you're only at like 2 centimeters? How would you react? And I did feel okay to get checked. And I was at 3.5 centimeters and about 80% effaced. So I was pumped. I was like, okay, this is happening. And then it didn't happen. More prodromal labor. And I did end up texting Danielle and I was like, should we just go in, get a low dose of Pitocin? Like, and she was like, absolutely not. You are not doing this. Like, like, of course she's so understanding, but she's like, no, you have worked so hard to have your labor start naturally. You are not going in to get a low dose of Pitocin when you already are almost to 4 centimeters. And so on Friday, June 20th, I was at 41.2, and that night started again with some serious contractions, but these were very, very different. Mm-hmm. And through this whole pregnancy, I was like, but how am I going to know? How am I going to know when I'm actually in labor? And everyone's like, oh, you'll just know. And I was like, whatever. Like,
that's so annoying.
Yes. Like, give me more substantial evidence that I'm in labor. But it was, I just knew. And I feel like it was God telling me, I very distinctly, it was get to the hospital. And so about 2 a.m., I started feeling really nauseous and I woke up my husband and I told him, I was like, okay, this is happening. So we threw everything in our bags and it was definitely time to go. And again, we had an hour and 15 minute drive. So I was nervous of how that would look in the car, but my birthing playlist saved the day. I was deep breathing and singing low to the songs that were on my playlist. And we got to the hospital around 4 a.m. and the labor shakes were going strong. Danielle met us there at the hospital, and we got into the hospital birthing room. And this hospital is fantastic because they have big size birthing pools, which is what I wanted. Water is something that's always been really big in my life. My mom told me I was a water baby growing up. So I knew I wanted to have a water birth. And when we got in there, I was like, do I need to be checked? Like, should I see how far along I am? And Danielle was like, no one's worried about your progress right now. Like, you don't need to be checked. Let's just get you in the birthing tub and let's get this going. And the nurses were absolutely incredible. On my birthing, what is it called? Birthing plan. I told them, I was like, I don't want to be touched. I do not. After what had happened with my pregnancies, especially with all those nurses trying to remove that cervical lip, I don't want to be touched at all.
Yeah.
And they did.
And
they
that's so huge to share that, right? Like on your birth plan, Women of Strength, like write those things in a notable section on the top so that your nurses don't have that appointment with you. They don't have, you know, that rapport. They're coming in they don't know anything. And so the more that you can give them a little bit of context, like, enables them to provide you with better care, you know? So I'm so glad you did that.
Yeah. And that was, I did not want to have IVs. I wanted to be able just to be free. And they were absolutely abiding. Like, they were completely supportive of that. So it was so funny. I posted on the VBAC Link community. I was like, what do you wear for a water birth? Like, I was nervous about, like, being exposed. But as soon as I got into the laboring room, I was like, I do not care. And just, like, stripped down and just jumped into the pool. But as soon as I got into the water, I was like, okay, I can do this. And it was just Brendan, my husband, and Danielle. And they were absolute champions of hip squeezes for 2.5 hours. And that's all I wanted. I remember when Paige, my midwife, came in, and I remember saying, oh, Paige is here. And I could feel my body relax. It was literally a physical, like, she's here, I can do this. And the contractions at this point, 2.5 hours, were getting super, super intense. When I asked for nitrous oxide, and the machines they kept bringing me were not working. So I was like, whatever, just get them out of the room. So I was going all in to do this naturally. And I started feeling frantic, and the sounds that I started to make were getting higher in pitch. And I knew that I was getting closer to transitioning. But my care team was incredible at reminding me to breathe through them and to stay low. And with all of that, I knew I was in transition, and I was starting to doubt it all. But I had to audibly tell myself, I can do this. I can do this. And I just kept repeating that over and over again out loud. And at this point, I remember Danielle saying she knew exactly when to switch things up. She said, really calmly, she said, hey, why don't we go labor on the toilet a bit? And that's when things started really going to get my daughter, to birth my daughter. And so the perfect moment, she said, let's go labor on the toilet. So I labored on the toilet for a bit. And I was like, if I do not get in this birthing tub or the birthing pool again, I'm going to have her on the toilet. And I do not want to have her on the toilet. So it happened really, really quick. I could almost felt like my body was being taken over by this primal instinct. Like, I could just feel myself, like, observing myself almost. Like, it just wasn't me, but it was me, if that makes sense. I was making loud noises that I've never made in my life. It was loud and primal and yelling, and it felt so good to me. And during a short pause, Paige told me to reach down and to feel my baby. And I had, again, never experienced any of this before. So I reached down, and I actually didn't feel a hard head. It was like the sack, actually. But it was so cool. And I could not believe I was actually doing this. I remember hearing my husband crying, and he said, come on, babe, you're so close. She's right there. So I turned onto my left side, and I just bared down. I put my feet in the birthing pool and just pushed like no other. There was about 19 minutes of pushing, and it was the most incredible feeling. I felt so strong. It hurt like heck, but it was a good feeling. And I honestly can't put into words how it felt. She was out, and Paige swiftly caught her and put her immediately to my chest. And so for the very first time, I was finally able to hear my baby's first cries.
Ugh, and every time I see your birth photos and that quote, like, that just kills me. Yep. Every single time, Liz.
You know, it was the most beautiful moment I could have asked for. In the pictures that Danielle have, it's incredible because all the nurses are standing in the back. They're not touching me. They're not racing around to get things done. They're just watching. And as soon as Paige put Abigail, my daughter, on my chest, she backed away. It was everything I asked for and more. And Paige later told me that she was in call. So she was born in the amniotic sac, and which is just so special. And I also had never seen the placenta before. And so Paige showed me the placenta, and it was just the most beautiful. I got the golden hour. Breastfeeding started off incredibly, because I, again, with my sons, I had no idea of how many hours it was before I held them, but I got to hold my daughter for as long as I wanted. And so, yeah, it was just the absolute birth of my dreams, and everything happened because of my hard work and the birth care, the birth team that I had, and the quality of care that I received. So yeah, that's my story. And this postpartum experience has been absolutely beautiful. My sons love their sister so much. Every morning they ask her to ask me if they could hold her. And it's just been so beautiful.
Wow, that is so sweet. Oh, it was so special to hear your story, sweet lady. Like I said, I have fangirled over your story so hard as soon as Danielle. Because I mean, you should know that there were so many of us cheering for you. Like, I remember Danielle being like, hey, I don't think I'm going to miss her birth by any chance, but like, will you be a backup? And I was like, yeah, I'm like, yeah. I'm here. I can't. Oh my gosh. Yes. And Kylie and Laura. And like, as soon as you had your photos on Instagram, I was like, you guys, oh my God, she did.
Yes.
Like, we were just over the moon for you. And I'm just so proud of you. And you've done so much advocating and healing, and you've come so far to have such a beautiful, beautiful birth.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's just one thing that, like, for all of the women listening, it is absolutely okay to invest in yourself. And that's, I told my husband, I was like, I'm going to be selfish with this birth. And he never took it as me being selfish, but I had to say, like, I have to invest in myself. I have to take these appointments. I have to have Danielle. Like, you have to be okay with investing in yourself for the birth that you want.
Ugh. That's what I was just going to ask you. I was going to say, what advice do you have? It's so perfect. Oh, lady. Well, thank you so much for being on. You are an incredible inspiration to so many of us. So
thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. All the things.
Thanks so much.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.